here. It's gonna be better. It's gonna be different. I got a really good feeling about it this year. It's gonna be better. It's got so much.
Well, hey there, friends and neighbors. It's Dan Cavallari, Slow Guy on the Fast Ride, here with another episode of the Slow Guy on the Fast Ride podcast. I know you've all missed me. It's been a while. It's been what? I don't know. 6 days. That's a long time to go without Dan. We think we can all agree. Today we're talking a little bit about, now I used to have a pretty nightmare commute when I was working in Boulder and I live outside of Boulder. It's not far, but the traffic is just awful enough that it was such a mental drain, and it made life really difficult. And for us in the bike world, we all know how good a bike ride feels. So it seems obvious that, you know, I would try to trade that commute for a bike ride. And I often did that. But you know, there were days when I just didn't feel like it. It was cold, or it was, you know, whatever. I just didn't feel like pedaling a bike. And, you know, it always helps when there's incentives. And I have had jobs in the past where there were incentives to ride a bike to work. But it's always been sort of this pet idea, you know, for companies. And so, you know, recently with the changes we've seen in the workplace with COVID and with remote work and all this other things, you know, companies are sort of grappling with how they can, A, get their employees out of the car, B, back into the office, and C, just in a better frame of mind when they get there. And I think some of these incentive programs can help. People for Bikes has one of those very types of programs that they're helping companies integrate into their sort of benefits package for employees. And so on the line right now, I've got Ryan Burkett, the Director of Enterprise Partnerships for People for Bikes. Ryan, how's it going?
Good, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Your title sounds so intense, like you, the Director of Enterprise Partnerships.
I know. I've tried to make like scale it back and just say bike, yeah. Guru, you know.
I'm bike dude. I'm a guy with bikes. Yeah. Exactly. Well, thanks for joining me today. And you know, People for Bikes, before we even jump into what People for Bikes is doing with RideSpot and all these other the incentive programs, tell me a little bit. I think we've all sort of heard of People for Bikes, and we vaguely know that it is like an advocacy group. Tell me a little bit about what People for Bikes does and why we as cyclists need to engage with People for Bikes in the first place.
Yeah, I appreciate you starting there, because I think a lot of times I agree there is like a misconception, or people know part of what People for Bikes does, but not the full scope of our work. So I appreciate you starting there. So People for Bikes operates kind of as two major entities. It is the nation's largest bicycle advocacy group, but we also operate as the bike industry's trade association. So I think 4 years ago we merged with BPSA and became the Bike Industries Trade Association, as well as the Bike Industries Advocacy or advocacy organization in the bike industry. And then kind of all of our work works towards our mission of getting more people on bikes more often. And we kind of separate that into three major verticals. We focus on developing more bike infrastructure to help individuals ride wherever they want to ride and whenever they want to ride. We also focus on pro bike policy in Washington, D.C. So we do that on the federal and state level to remove barriers and to also help the bike industry organizations get bikes and bike products into the country. Mm-hmm. And then the third vertical that we focus on is participation, which is actually the specific vertical that I operate in, working on our RideSpot app and platform, which we'll talk about today.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you are big bicycle. Yeah. <It's> the, you are the I heard a politician say that once, and I cracked up. I mean, come on. Anyway, but you are the advocacy group that's fighting for the things that we're all complaining about, which is infrastructure. We need infrastructure. We need, you know, more people on bikes. So People for Bikes is actually activating those complaints and saying we're working toward that.
Absolutely.
And as part of that, so your focus is, you know, sort of the engagement arm and getting people on bikes. Tell me about RideSpot, what that is, and how that came about, when it came about.
Yeah, RideSpot's a really cool platform. It is both desktop and mobile versions. And RideSpy, it was originally developed as a way to reduce barriers to new and infrequent riders, allowing them to record and share their favorite routes, which created a crowdsourcing platform, which allowed individuals to search and ride pre-ridden routes. And that kind of helped reduce the barriers of intimidation of wanting to ride in a specific areas. And then that kind of grew from there, and we started to engage independent bike dealers and allowed them to use the tool as a way to engage their regional communities of cyclists. So they were able to authenticate routes and share events. It also is a social platform for you to engage with other riders in your area. So that was a lot of fun. And then from there, it's now grown a third stage, which has turned into this enterprise stage, which essentially is a way for organizations to run private events instead of having it be a public platform. It can run as a private platform where companies can use the software to facilitate their bike benefits programming.
Mm-hmm. Now, you sent me an article before we recorded the podcast referring to sort of the engagement work you've done with the mountain bike community, which I think is cool, because I think when we think about commuting, the easy audience is, you know, people who have ridden road bikes or commuter bikes before, but then you branch out to mountain bikers and there are engagement opportunities there. But I'm more curious about how you reach audiences outside of the bicycle sphere. I mean, it's easier, I would say, to engage people who are already in the bike world. It's much, much harder to engage companies and employees who are not already entrenched in the bicycle world. Do you have like a specific pathway for engaging those types of companies and those people?
I wouldn't say there's a specific pathway outlined, but there are several engagement opportunities that we've identified. Obviously, the League of American Cyclists, another great advocacy organization in the United States, they've done the bicycle-friendly business outreach. So organizations who are non-endemic or non-bike industry, but they see the value in the bicycle, have taken time to submit an application and say that they're interested in becoming a bicycle-friendly business as deemed by the league. I think that's a great example of how non-bike industry businesses are raising their hand and saying, hey, we see value in the bicycle as a tool of engagement for our staff. So that's one way. And then also a lot of the organizations who are leading the way in kind of having a comprehensive benefits package that goes beyond a 401k and a profit sharing, but actually like engages employees on another level. Those businesses are applying for like Outside Magazine. They do the best places to work lists. And a lot of times those organizations are the ones that are really interested to learn more about what is bike benefit programming and how does it operate in a post-COVID world.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts in a minute, but I want to talk more about engagement and figuring out how to get these companies involved. But I'm curious if COVID and the pandemic had a major impact on, you know, what types of companies are reaching out and saying we need to find better ways to engage our employees and retain them and keep them happy. I mean, was there a big bump? I mean, was this something that was happening before COVID and then, during and after COVID, you saw a bump in interest, or has it been fairly consistent throughout?
That's a great question, because there are so many interesting things that change because of the pandemic. As you know, the Great Resignation, I mean, employees are starting to just leave their places of work because they're ready for something new and wanting a change of scenery. And one of the ways to engage those employees to help them want to stay is by offering benefits that are, showing the company's focus on their employees' wellness, both mental and physical wellness. And when you offer the benefits that are above a competitor company benefits package, you're kind of positioning your company as, hey, this is another reason why you should stick around, because we care about you. But then there's also a lot of other changes that have happened to the specifically to transportation demand management planning. You know, a lot of large organizations, we're talking 5,000 plus employees, they start thinking through TDM solutions, transportation demand management. And those organizations, obviously their programming's had to change completely because they went from in-office staff and trying to figure out where to how to get more parking spaces to now we have nobody in the office. We're just trying to convince people to come back. So that's changed a lot as well. And we can get more into that if you'd like to, but it's really interesting how the pandemic has shaped this type of programming.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there measurable data that, I mean, like I said, we're going to talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts, but is there measurable data that you can then present to companies and say, this is how it's benefiting you to have your employees commute in? They're, you know, more productive. They're, you know, in a better mood when they get in. They, you know, are spending less time actually in traffic. I mean, is there measurable data as a result of the program?
So right now we haven't even officially publicized this program yet because we're still kind of in its infancy. So I would say most of our data right now is pretty qualitative. Mm-hmm. We do run the program internally at People for Bikes, and we have a few partner organizations who have already helped us be the beta version of the programming. So we have a lot of qualitative data of individuals physically saying, hey, I wouldn't have ridden in February if you didn't have this thing going. And I had another coworker say, this is the best benefit I've ever received as an employee. And I think those are really encouraging and show us that we're pursuing a program that's really going to be impactful to a larger group of individuals who may not have ridden otherwise. So currently the data is pretty qualitative, but we hope to be aggregating quantitative data as we kind of go year over year with the program. Mm-hmm.
But I also wonder if in the lead up to developing this program, I mean, there was a reason you did it. And I think, you know, that speaks to things we already knew about what such programs could do and basically what riding a bike can do. And People for Bikes probably has a lot of that data. So, you know, was that what spurred the development of this program? I mean, knowing that these things already are known, right? Like these benefits are already known. We know that riding a bike is better for you. We know that commuting by car is awful, you know?
Yeah. People for Bikes does have a data and research team that focuses on local innovation and helping cities develop infrastructure that can remove barriers. And we do a lot of research on transportation habits. However, I would say the reason that this specific program has probably been championed through People for Bikes is because we see the value in the RideSpot tool as removing barriers to cyclists who wouldn't have ridden otherwise. And we really wanted to publicize that beyond the independent bike dealers and take it to the non-endemic, non-bike industry organizations and show them that, hey, if your staff is even remotely interested in riding their bike as a form of transportation, whether it be to the office, to get groceries, to drop off their kids, we have a tool that can help them do that. And that's kind of been our North Star. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in all of the years that I've been in the bike industry, every new cyclist cites the same reason why they don't ride, and that's safety. What are you doing to address that for, you know, these people you're talking about who otherwise would not have gotten on a bike or had the tools to do that? You know, their concern is always safety, and infrastructure is lacking in this country pretty dramatically. How do you address that, not only with the program, but also with the app?
Yeah, RideSpot in particular does a good job of showing new riders pre-ridden routes. So a cyclist has already navigated the route that you're about to pursue or about to embark on. The University of Maryland is actually using RideSpot in this capacity where they have a bike concierge program. And their staff is actually showing students, hey, don't ride down this thoroughfare that's 45 miles an hour. Take one block detour and go down this bike path that actually gives you a 25 mile an hour, you know, bump, and you have a bumper that separates you from the traffic. So there's, by using the app to show pre-ridden routes to groups and kind of, you can create those routes to show pockets of, from this pocket, you can get to work this way. From this pocket, you can get to work this way. And then organizations are also using it to do bike trains. So encouraging folks to meet up at a certain location and they bike train in. So the RideSpot platform actually has a lot of functionality that allows individuals to remove or to reduce that barrier for the safety concern, which is really nice.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the app specifically and the and what I get as an employee, what I get as an employer, and what People for Bikes gets out of it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This year, it's going to be better. It's going to be different. I got a really good feeling about it this year. It's gonna be better.
Welcome back to the Slow Guy on the Fast Ride podcast. I am still your host, Dan Cavallari, and I am still here with Ryan Burkett of People for Bikes. Ryan, you know, I've actually participated in programs like this before. I used to work for a company that was a subsidiary of QBP, and QBP has a program very similar to this. And I think when you talk about programs like this, there's three primary beneficiaries, right? There's the employer, there's the employee, and then there's the company making the actual app, right? Which is People for Bikes in this case. I want to talk about the benefits for all three of those stakeholders. So let's start with People for Bikes. What does People for Bikes get out of offering this program?
So our mission is to get more people riding bikes more often. So clearly the if more people are riding bikes more often, that's a direct benefit, which is really nice. So as I mentioned kind of at the earlier part of the podcast, one of our verticals of engagement is participation. So we are interested in the business of getting more people riding bikes, and we believe that the RideSpot platform is going to allow us to do that. So as people download the app and as people participate in this programming, we're hopefully going to expose ourselves to individuals who wouldn't have known of People for Bikes otherwise. I think, the organization is pretty synonymous in the industry. But when you are able to activate and cultivate more advocates outside of the bike industry, that's a huge win for People for Bikes. You know, our work is funded by individuals as well as the bike industry. So getting more individuals aware of People for Bikes work is we're a direct beneficiary of that by hopefully getting more advocates who are donating to help further our cause of getting more people on bikes. So I would say there's a lot of tangible benefits to People for Bikes running this program.
And now I'm an employee and my company is now offering this benefit program. What do I get out of it specifically? Now, I've signed up and yes, I've got these maps. They help me map my route. But in the end, what is the actual incentive for me to get on my bike, even when I'm kind of like, oh man, I don't really want to, but I got this thing, right? Like, what's the incentive?
Yeah, this part of the equation is pretty customizable from each business that decides to participate. So we do counsel new partners on, hey, you know, there's different ways to incentivize staff. First, we always survey the staff to ask them what would incentivize you as an employee. You know, what makes you want to ride more often? And it's really actually interesting to see what comes back from that, because it typically showcases gaps in the benefits programming that you have in place. Because everybody doesn't respond the same. Everybody doesn't respond with cash first, which is a surprise, you know. Some organizations that have a good compensation package already, the individuals will respond with paid time off, or they'll respond with large giveaways like, you know, a bike raffle or something along those. But that specific thing, like the actual incentive, the prize that's provided to the employee is customizable from each business. So we do see a lot of changes there. And we have a holistic, like a comprehensive list of both monetary incentives and non-monetary incentives. So if anybody's interested, you know, you can reach out to me. I don't know if you want to drop my email on the end of the podcast, but I'd be happy to answer or provide that list of, you know, different incentive types for individuals who are interested.
And so really what you're saying is this is really customizable to, you know, the company itself and to the employees who work there, which is interesting because, you know, you think about there is no vague company, you know, and there is no vague employee as a label. I mean, things are very individualized, and that can vary based on where they are in the country, you know, the climate. I mean, there's just so many other variables about what can factor into what would make most sense for a company to offer their employees, which actually makes this probably more of a successful model, right? Because, you know, you could offer a daily stipend, you know, and that might work wonderfully if you live in Phoenix, Arizona, or somewhere that's warm all the time. Maybe Phoenix isn't the right the right one, but, you know, somewhere that's pretty temperate. But in the heart of, you know, Maine in the middle of the winter, you know, maybe that dollar a day or whatever, $5 a day, just ain't worth it to go out there and brave that, you know, that blast of cold. So that tailoring aspect is actually pretty interesting to me.
It also, one other thing I wanted to comment on about that customization is it also allows the organization to highlight what's meaningful to them as an organization. I'll give you an example of how we do it internally at People for Bikes. You know, we really want to focus on sustainable transportation internally. Mm-hmm. So we reward staff for taking trips instead of miles. So it's not miles based, it's trips based. So that just encourages folks to replace those short errand trips. And then also we want to focus on giving back to the industry. So if staff uses their incentive cash to purchase anything within the bike industry, then we double down on that investment and provide a double. So it showcases the ability for organizations to say, hey, this is what's important to us, and this is how we're going to showcase that through how we develop our benefits package.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, I guess one of the other, you know, sort of big questions is, why would employers care about their employees' happiness, their employees' health? What is the benefit for the employer at this point? And also, does the employer buy into this program, or is it a free program for them?
There is a small cost to running the program for the software itself. So on our website, we do outline the cost structure. We have you're able to kind of type in how many employees you have or how much staff you have, and then it'll give you a cost. But basically at 500 or less employees, it's $2,400 a year. So super affordable, you know, a really entry level cost. And we set that appropriately just to kind of cover the development costs of onboarding new partners. However, and we were intentionally left space so that the employer could also have an incentive package, whatever they deem as being the benefit that they're going to be providing their staff for riding. So there is a cost to them. And then your first question on the employers.
Why would they care? Yeah. Like what is the overall benefit to them, to this program? Because, you know, we're still in a capitalist society here, and dollars and cents are what rule. So what is the overall benefit for the employer?
One of the big things that we've seen so far with the companies that are currently running it is a sustainability piece. So they really, there's organizations who are kind of pursuing a carbon neutrality. And in order to do that, there's scope 3 emissions include employee transportation. So in order to offset their scope 3 carbon emissions, they are able to collect data from staff riding and showcase that they're doing low emission transportation options. So that's one big reason that we've seen grab hold with a lot of organizations, because there's like a tangible benefit there of like them like being able to show movement towards our carbon or net zero aspirations. But then there is also, as we talked about briefly earlier, there also is that ability to offer a benefits package that's better than your competition. And there are organizations who have verbally said, you know, this is something that sets us apart because you're offering something that is cool and unique. And it's amazing because individuals who work for a company with a bike benefits program, even if they don't use it, see it as a value add, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is really interesting just to think through the psychology of that. Like,
yeah,
I love having this program, even though I'm not using it. I love just having it as an option and being able to tell my buddies, hey, you know, like if I rode to work, I'd actually get paid for it. You know, that's just, it's really interesting how the program can benefit folks who aren't even participating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think people want to be proud of where they work, right? They want to say my company is doing something meaningful and effective. And I actually think that's becoming more of a theme as the years pass in the United States and as a new generation of workers come along. I mean, it's just not enough for a paycheck to show up. There's got to be some sort of meaning behind the work that they're doing. And I think that's one way of doing it, is sort of saying, look, my company is also doing this. And so I think for employers, if you are an employer considering such a thing, I mean, that's another tangible benefit right there. I'm curious for you, as a, you know, at People for Bikes, you know, one of the things you do is advocate for better infrastructure. Is there a point at which you take this aggregate data from this, when this program launches and, or, you know, when you have enough data to collect, I suppose, where you can actually use that data to say, hey, look, this is the way people are changing. We need to make the infrastructure in the United States reflect that. Is there a specific point at which that happens? Is it already happening? How do you use this data to your advantage in that regard?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the right person on the team to ask that question to, because we do have our data and insights team, and they, so member organizations. So we have that side of the business that's focused on the bike industry. And we have coalition members who are paying partners, helping move our progress our work. And on that side of the business, we have what's called our business intelligence hub. So we collect data that can help shape decision making. So absolutely, they use RideSpot as one of those data inputs. And the more riders we have in the software, the more capable it is of producing quality data for those organizations to view. But it is one data point that's supplemented by all the other data that the team is grabbing. We on our website, we do have a lot of that data listed on peopleforbikes.org. So if your listeners were interested in kind of seeing what type of research we're already doing and then how that could change based on more ridership through the RideSpot platform, that's there for them to consume.
Now, we talked a little bit about how employers can get involved and get started with this. I mean, it's really just a matter of reaching out to People for Bikes and signing up for the program. What if I'm an employee that wants to present this to my company and get them involved? Is there a way to do that, to facilitate that through People for Bikes?
That's an awesome question. It's been very interesting to see the different stakeholders that are in the game, because program participants that you're describing, an employee or a staff member, those are the individuals who are most psyched and like really ready to get this thing going, because obviously they already like riding bikes. They want to get benefited for the activities they enjoy doing. So that individual is an individual we're trying to provide tools to. On the website, we do have a request template. So we basically wrote a letter to their administration or to their HR benefits team, and it allows them to customize that letter to their own needs. But we already kind of put in the major language of, hey, here's what People for Bikes is doing. This is why our organization would benefit from this. This is why I personally believe in this. And then it allows them to cater that messaging to their specific audience. But we've kind of done the legwork to get that ready for them to go. So I can provide a link to that you can drop in the podcast if you'd like. Otherwise, but what's interesting is, so you kind of have three major stakeholders in the game of getting a bike benefits program at your place of employment. You have senior leadership team who inevitably ends up funding the program. You have HR benefits who typically administers the program, and then you have the program participants. So those three major stakeholders are all levels of the organization that need to buy in. So starting with the program participants is a great way and an easy way to get people excited, but they need to sell it up. So that's always kind of a fun process to see how it works.
Sure, sure. And, you know, you mentioned on the People for Bikes website, I mean, people can actually book an appointment with you if they want to talk about it, correct?
Absolutely. You get 30 minutes of my time whenever you want.
Nice. I'm gonna book all of them and we just sit here and chat. Ryan, if people want to find out more, where should they go and how do they reach out to you specifically?
So I would say if you want to know more specifically about the bike benefits program, you'll want to check out enterprise.ridespot.org. That's the website that's specifically been created for bike benefits programming information. So that has like the employee template if they wanted to fill that out. It has the pricing calculator if they wanted to see how much it would cost for their specific organization. It also provides blog content about other programs and how those have been successful. So that's the best method if they want to get in front of the bike benefit or get more information about bike benefits programming. But if they also want to get more information about People for Bikes and all the other work that we're doing for the bike industry, then that's on peopleforbikes.org. And we have a litany of sites on there for all the different initiatives we're pursuing. So please go check those out to see what interests you most. And then if they wanted to have, if they have questions or want to reach out to me directly, I'm happy to take those at ryan@peopleforbikes.org.
Cool. And of course, if you guys have questions for me or want me to pester Ryan for you, I'm happy to do that. You can find me at Slow Guy on the Fast Ride on Instagram, at Slow Guy Fast Ride on Twitter. They take away some of my letters. Twitter. I'm usually on there. And of course, www.slowguyonthefastride.com. You can find me in any of those places. I am always happy to reach out to People for Bikes and ask your questions for you or answer them if I know the answer already, which I'm so wise. How would I not know the answer? If I don't know the answer, I'll make it up for you. Okay. Ryan, thanks for taking the time today to chat, and I do appreciate it. And for those of you listening, please do check out peopleforbikes.org. They're doing a lot of great work. Ryan is one of many fine folks over at People for Bikes, fighting for all the things that we as cyclists need and believe in. So, Ryan, thank you for that, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for your time, Dan. I really appreciate your genuine interest in the topic.
Now, of course, I'm very much invested in it myself as a commuter myself. So I appreciate the work you guys are doing. And all of you listening, thanks for listening. Again, reach out if you have questions. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Slow Guy on the Fast Ride podcast.